Welcome back to the Underdog Soccer Podcast. This is Matty Nips with episode number 18 of the USP. So I remember when I was like 11 or 12 years old, and I used to play football with friends. I didn't play football seriously, never on a team or anything, but just with friends. And I remember playing defense, and I'm up against the receiver, and I would intentionally give him more space, more distance between me and him than I should have. And what I was trying to do was to bait the quarterback into throwing the ball to the wide receiver in my hopes that I could like make the big play and I could, you know, jump on it quick and get the interception or whatever. That probably never happened. Maybe once. I'll give myself a little credit and say it happened one time in my whole childhood. Anyway, that's how I feel Anthony Robinson is somewhat playing. He is relying way too much on his athletic ability and his speed, and not enough on his brain and making the smart play and putting himself in a position to play better defense. So Robinson is super fast, he's quick, he's athletic, he's got all those skills. But versus Colombia, and then also when we played against Brazil a couple weeks ago, or I guess almost a month ago, he was caught out of position many times. And now it's to the point where his speed doesn't matter that much when he's playing against guys that are just as fast as him, maybe faster. So even though he's 20 years old, I think he definitely has a lot of room to make some improvements, and one of those is his positioning overall as a defender. I think, you know, him going forward and running up the flank and playing balls across, he's confident there. He's good there. I'm fine with his offensive abilities as a left back. But the number one goal of a left back is to defend. So I'd rather him work a little bit more on his defense than on his offense. So, you know, he's 20 years old. He's, you know, playing in the championship in England for Wigan. He only made his first appearance, his first cap with the men's national team in late May. So basically he has five caps, and he's been with the team for five months. So we're already, we as the media, the fans, the, you know, pretty much everyone watching is ready to anoint him as the left back of the next 10 to 12 years, 12 years at minimum. And I'm not saying I'm not ready to do that, because I did have really good things to say about him in the last podcast, and I am pleased with him overall. I just think he has a long way to go to be a more consistent player. And versus Colombia, he really showed his lack of experience and his youth in that game. So I'd like to see him more, but he definitely has some room for improvement. Definitely needs to make those improvements. Also, one good yet bad thing, or I guess good for him, but bad for the team and his position and everyone watching, is there's just a bunch of shit behind him. I mean, there's no one even on the depth chart behind him. We saw Ben Sweat, who subbed in late in the Colombia game, and I'm assuming he's going to start versus Peru on Tuesday, but Ben Sweat at 27 years old just made his first start for the men's national team. So it's not like we're really confident in a 27-year-old who's just now breaking into the national team. He could be our replacement at left back for the next couple years, but I'd rather find a 20-year-old who can be in that position for 12 years versus a 27-year-old who's only going to be worth anything for the next couple. So being that there's really no one behind him on the depth chart, Robinson can continue to screw up and have really poor games, and there's no one behind him that's even worth giving them a shot. I even got a call, actually, earlier today, and they were offering me to start playing left back. So I figured I could be like the maybe the top five, top eight or so, maybe not. I don't know. We're completely shit at that position. So we'll kind of see what happens moving forward. Anyway, so I went to the game. It was an awesome experience. It was wild. It was really fun. It was emotional. It was just a really good time. And the great thing about going to a game is that you see that raw emotion of, you know, scoring goals and doing everything. And it was an exciting game. And even though Columbia won 4-2, there were some bright spots in there. And overall, I was thrilled with going and thrilled with how USA played. I wouldn't say thrilled with how USA played, but I was pleased with how USA played. But the one bad thing about going to a game is it's almost better to watch a game for analysis purposes from a TV. Unless you have like an amazing spot like in the commentary booth, but I was behind one of the goals. So when you're behind one of the goals, it's hard as hell to see the things on the other side of the field unless you keep looking up at the Jumbotron. And then it's even hard to see the stuff that's coming at you. Whether USA is defending or they're on offense, it's hard to see the kind of levels of, you know, not levels, but things break down and things, how the ball moves. So I kept finding myself watching the game, watching the Jumbotron, watching the game, watching the Jumbotron. So long story short, my analysis of the game wasn't that thorough. I didn't take notes as well, so it's not like I'm going to sit here and break down the game play by play and talk about all the goals and talk about the specifics of the game, but there are still some things that I want to mention. The biggest thing that stood out to me was this. I'm walking up to the game and I notice, I'm like, there's a lot of fans that are wearing yellow jerseys, Columbia jerseys. And I'm like, I wonder if there's going to be more Columbia fans at the game than American fans. And then we get into the stadium and I'm walking around and I'm like, holy shit, there are way more Colombian fans. So I get to my seat, I start panning through the audience, looking around, I'm taking some pictures, I'm taking video, like panoramic shots, and I came to the conclusion of probably about 80% of the crowd was Colombian. And that's on the conservative side is 80%. Because then I also noticed I'm looking like immediately around me and I noticed that Colombian fans are also wearing white jerseys and dark blue jerseys. So as I pan through the audience and I'm just looking for all the yellow jerseys to be Colombian fans, I'm just assuming that everyone wearing white and dark blue were American fans, yet some of them were also Colombian fans. So that's really frustrating to me. And it's hard to say this without coming off as an angry white male bigot, but it's frustrating to go to a home game and be an away fan. And the frustrating part about that is that the United States Soccer Federation are the ones that create that environment, and I do think that it's on purpose. Recently, I thought that USSF's main goal was to make money. And I knew that they wanted to make money, and I knew that was their number one goal, and I always had a problem with that because I feel like in any sports-related company, brand, team, federation, your number one goal should be winning. And then your second goal, slightly below that, should also be to make money. I understand it's a business as well. But I've always felt that United States Soccer Federation and the MLS and everything that happens in the United States, especially in terms of soccer, the number one goal is money. Well, this game proved to me that not only is their number one goal to make money, but it's their only goal. The Federation does not give a shit about wins. They don't care about player development. They don't care about having American fans come out to the game. All that they care about is the more butts in seats makes more money. So I did a little bit of research, and not only is Florida by far the state with the largest Colombian population in the United States, but it far exceeds any other state in the United States. 30% of the entire United States population of Colombians reside in Florida, which equates to about 300,000 Colombians in South Florida alone. And it's pretty much from like Tampa and Orlando south. Orlando's about an hour and a half to 2 hours from Tampa, and Miami is about 3.5 to 4 hours, I think, from Tampa. So the U.S. Soccer Federation intentionally chose to play this game versus Colombia in Tampa in hopes to get all of the Colombian fans to show up for this, and that's exactly what they got. And they even bragged, you know, midway through the game that there were 38,000 fans at the game, and that's the largest crowd ever to watch a men's national team game in the state of Florida. Some bullshit about that. I don't know if it was in the state of Florida or a professional game or a men's national team game, but whatever it was. So it's really frustrating that they do that shit on purpose. To take it even a step further, my seats were close to, if anybody's been to Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, they have the big pirate ships there that shoot the cannons off for every Buccaneers touchdown. So I'm sitting right in front of those, and there's like a little plaza there that overlooks the stadium, and they have a DJ set up right in front of, you know, the pirate ship and everything there. And the DJ played reggaeton music the entire time, like before the game and at halftime. And it just blows my mind. Like, they're not even hiding it. They're not even trying to cater to the United States fans. They're not even, it's just as blatant as possible. They're only caring about money, and they know that there will be more Colombian fans there. And so that's the frustrating part for me. I wouldn't give a shit if there was 80% Colombian fans, but I want them to care, and I want them to put it in a place where they're trying to get more American fans there. If we play a game in Mexico, or if we play a game in Costa Rica, or any other country in the entire world, that country is not going to cater to us. They're not going to make, you know, they're not going to have country music night in, you know, we play against France. They're not going to just play country music every night when we play in Lyon. They're not going to have bring your American flag to the game night in England when we play them in a month, or Italy. They don't give a shit about the opposing team. They're not going to make it easier for the opposing team to come in there and feel comfortable and have a big fan base there. I did a little more research. On Tuesday, we play Peru in Connecticut. And I know Connecticut's like the whitest state ever, but, you know, it is 2 hours or so from New York City. And sure enough, one of the largest Peruvian populations in the United States is in New York City and surrounding New Jersey, the third and fourth largest populations in the United States. So it's just like, you know, it's a bit of a theory that I'm starting to create on my own, but it's starting to make a lot of sense that the United States Soccer Federation cares more about putting people in seats, no matter if they're home fans or they're away fans. And then I was also thinking, like, I wonder what the amount of advertisement money that's spent in American markets versus in Hispanic markets in the United States. So how many more advertisements are on TV and radio and websites and internet in the United States on Hispanic speaking or Spanish speaking sites versus English speaking sites. So anyway, moving on from there, a couple things I was going to mention about the game. Michael Bradley played the whole game, which I was kind of surprised about. Like, I wasn't surprised that he was going to start. Ever since, you know, they made the decision for Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, and Christian Pulisic not to be there, that just, you know, firmed up my opinion that Michael Bradley was definitely going to start, but he played the whole 90 minutes, which I was pretty surprised by. And I remember watching it from the angle that I'm at, and I'm like, it doesn't seem like he really did anything that terrible. I didn't notice him like giving up the ball really bad or playing really bad balls. So like I had to come home after that and do a little research and watch a couple videos online. And Falcao's goal was pretty bad on Michael Bradley's part. So Michael Bradley's coming in from just inside half field, midfield, and Falcao is actually behind him about 4 or 5 yards behind him. And Falcao makes a sprint pretty much from midfield to inside the box. And he's the one that ends up scoring the goal. And Bradley just kind of trots back at like 75% speed the whole way and just lets Falcao pass him up just easily and doesn't even attempt to like follow him and defend him or anything. And that ended up leading to a goal. Both of the USA goals were really nice. Bobby Wood's goal and then Kellen Acosta's goal were really good. A lot of people were giving, you know, a lot of credit to Tim Weah for the ball that he played to Bobby Wood, and no discredit at all to Weah because it was a great ball, but I almost want to focus more on Julian Green started that play off. You know, he's the one that stole the ball from the Colombian player, made a good tackle, and played the ball to Timmy Weah. So that was a great little hustle play on him, and so that kind of started the whole thing off. So moving forward from there, like I mentioned a minute ago, we are playing Peru on Tuesday in Connecticut, 7:30 again. And after the game, Dave Sarakin said that he plans to make a number of changes for the Peru game. So in my projected lineup, I just made all 11 changes. So my projected lineup has zero starting players from the Colombian game. So here's what I got. And it's a little bit comical, but honestly, I wouldn't be too surprised with most of these players starting. I'd actually be happy to see it because I believe if you're going to bring the player into camp, you need to put him on the field. You need to give him a consistent or a significant amount of time on the field to give a good judge of what type of player he is. And that relates back to Josh Sargent and Novakovic came on in the last 10 minutes, and both of them are young guys that are unproven right now, and we still don't know what either of them are moving forward. We know what they can do on their club teams, but Novakovic has played in 3 games and is still only totaled like 50 minutes maybe. So I'm taking Dave Sarakin's word for it. He says he's going to make a number of changes, and so I think he's going to make 11 starting lineup changes, and here's what it's going to be. So in goal, instead of Zach Steffen, they're going to go with Brad Guzan. I'm not too impressed with Ethan Horvath, so I think Guzan's going to get the start over him. I do still think Brad Guzan is our second-best keeper behind Zach Steffen, so it's going to be him. Into the defense, our two center backs are going to be Aaron Long and Cameron Carter-Vickers. Cameron Carter-Vickers is a little bit more proven than Aaron Long, at least with the national team. Aaron Long has not yet made an appearance with the national team. He was in the camp when we were playing Brazil and Mexico, but he never, I don't think he was on the bench for either game. Maybe he was on the bench for the Mexico game, but definitely not versus Brazil. On the outsides, right back is going to be Reggie Cannon, young right back out of FC Dallas, 20 years old, never made an appearance for the men's national team. So he's my right back. And then on the left is going to be Ben Sweat. He came in for Anthony Robinson against Colombia with maybe 15 to 20 minutes left. So I think as the starter, he's going to get, you know, a significant amount of time on Tuesday. Moving into the midfield, I do think we're going to go with a 4-4-2. And the reason why I think we're going to go with a 4-4-2 is because of our two up top. Basically, just to make sense of my lineup of switching all 11 players, to be perfectly honest with you. Anyway, So our four defenders are two kind of center mids. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, Will Trapp as the defensive mid and Marky Delgado slightly in front of them, or they're going to play dual center mid or center defensive mids, but they're going to be Will Trapp and Marky Delgado. The two wingers are going to be Fafa Piku and Jonathan Amon. Really excited to see Jonathan Amon. I'm hoping we see him on Tuesday. He's 19 years old, really promising young winger, and I think he's got a lot to offer. And then up top, we are finally officially going to see Andrea Novakovic start a game and get consistent minutes. And then also Josh Sargent up there. Josh Sargent has been killing it for Werder Bremen's U23s. So, and also I've heard that he's going to soon be bumped up to the senior squad at Werder Bremen. So hopefully he gets a good amount of minutes versus Peru on Tuesday. So there's my starting lineup, and that's it for me for now. We kept it under 20 minutes. No, it's at 21 minutes. Oh, well. Anyway, look back for episode number 19 after the Peru game. I do think we're going to do a little better against Peru, although putting out this lineup that I just stated doesn't show me as much promise. Peru's not as good of a team as Colombia. I think that's pretty obvious, so... You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we could tie this game or maybe even walk away with a win. Who knows? It's a friendly. You never know what to expect from these games. So, anyway, until next time, keep kicking ass.